I can't bring myself to tell her that he will never come back again. Lieutenant Hugo Reynaga said in a phone interview on Sunday that the Sheriff's Department has collected video of Anthony Lowe's shooting from a nearby business, but that it does not intend to release the video footage. Huntington Park police officers, he said, do not wear body cameras. Hugo Reynaga said two officers fired at Anthony Lowe somewhere around 10 times. We recovered 10 or 11 casings at the scene. I don't know which of those actually hit him. Hugo Reynaga said the names of the two officers who shot at Anthony Lowe will be released in the coming days. The police officers, he said, are on leave for a few days while they undergo a psychiatric evaluation, and they will be assigned administrative duties until the command staff approves them to go back to field work. Asked if there is any discussion of charges against the police officers who opened fire on Anthony Lowe, Hugo Reynaga said, no. The Huntington Park Police Department did not return calls requesting comment on Sunday. Asked why it was necessary to shoot Anthony Lowe, Hugo Reynaga noted that the officers repeatedly tased him, to no effect, before opening fire. The Sheriff's Department's initial statement about the shooting investigation, released on Friday, 27th of January, said Anthony Lowe twice tried to throw his knife at police officers. But Hugo Reynaga said on Sunday that Anthony Lowe did not throw the knife ultimately, but he made the motion multiple times over his head like he was going to throw the knife. Hugo Reynaga said he did not know how many times Anthony Lowe was actually tased. Fox 11 Los Angeles, part of the Fox News Channel, has also covered this story and tells us more. A 36-year-old stabbing suspect, who police shot and killed in Huntington Park, California, was identified on Saturday, 28th of January 2023. Anthony Lowe was identified as the victim by the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office. Police officers from the Huntington Park Police Department responded to a stabbing call at 3:40 p.m. on Thursday, 26th of January, in the 2400 block of Slauson Avenue. Upon their arrival, the victim gave them a description of a suspect in a wheelchair, according to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department's Information Bureau. After searching the area, police officers located the suspect near the 1900 block of Slauson Avenue, and as they tried to detain him, Anthony Lowe allegedly drew a 12-inch butcher's knife and attempted to throw the weapon at the police officers. According to detectives, Lowe was tased at least twice by the police officers, but he attempted to throw the butcher's knife at them again. Officers then fired at Anthony Lowe, who was struck by gunfire in the upper body. Anthony Lowe was treated at the scene by Los Angeles County Fire Department paramedics, but was pronounced dead at the scene. Police said they recovered a butcher's knife at the scene of the incident. Legends of Football.
The names and traits of great football players are everywhere, even in the far-fetched villages of a country in Africa. You might see a child who's wearing the Argentine national team's number 10 jersey with Messi's name emblazoned on the back. Thousands of miles away from Spain and Portugal, for example, in Singapore, you might find rooms where Ronaldo's posters are on the walls. People all around the world might exchange millions of pictures from Neymar in a single day. There are many people who get a haircut to look like Giroud or Griezmann. Millions of people visit their popular football players' pages on social media. This is beyond fame. This is beyond popularity. Football players are heroes, or at least we want to think that they're heroes. They do something we dream of. They face dangers, they fight, they gain victory, and revive hopes. This is the whole story. They have fans, people who embark on long journeys for them, people who argue for hours on social media because of them, people who run onto fields and put themselves in trouble because of them, people who fight because of them. Football fans can't go on living without being crazy about a player.
Two Everton supporters have raced onto the pitch and they're swamping Tribilco. And their two supporters are going to see no more of this game. And the phone probably telling them that. And a great tackle almost on the line.
This is the way football is. Football is a dramatic representation of our ordinary life. That's why, just like real life, it needs heroes. People need heroes. Someone who will fight on their behalf and gain pride and share his interests with everyone. Soldiers and commanders who show courage in the battlefields, the police officers who save the hostages, the politicians who stand up against corruption and bias, firefighters, revolutionaries, peace activists, or even if we don't have enough heroes, we'll make heroes ourselves. The history of cinema is replete with heroes who didn't exist in the real world, but we praise them for their courage or for the things they could do, but we couldn't. Actually, we're the same people in the stories, those who waited for the heroes to defeat the monsters so they'd feel relieved and hooray for them. But the thing is, the heroes look differently now. The heroes are not muscular and bulky people who beat up everyone anymore. They don't have special capes or costumes. They don't fly. They don't have wands, swords, or special x-rays. Today's heroes run in football fields and deal with the rival team's players on their own and do things not everyone can. Thank you. He's the person who turns worries into happiness. He turns smiles into tears. Prevents falls, failures, and defeats. He is a savior. He's someone you can hooray for. Sometimes, a player's continuous efforts turn him into everyone's hero, someone who reminds us that you can reach the pinnacle of success with perseverance and hard work. Brazilian Rivaldo was many people's hero. He was born in one of the most deprived favelas in Brazil. He was so malnourished that he lost a few of his teeth before he grew up. He was emaciated and he was limping because of the pain in his bones. But none of these things could stop him from becoming the dream player in 2002. Rivaldo is a hero because he fought against poverty and bias, because he taught us to fight as well. Sometimes a player's ingenuity makes him a hero. His unique technique and capabilities to change the result and save his team. Someone who can turn despair into hope. For example, when many people thought that Argentina will not qualify for the World Cup, Lionel Messi worked miracles.
Messi to accelerate and look for the hat-trick!
Messi saved his team single-handedly. That turned him into a hero.
He is unbelievable!
Sometimes heroes remind us that we can be different. A rebel, someone who gives us success to achieve other things.
Today at Old Trafford, it's the return of Eric Cantona, the most talented, temperamental, and talked about footballer in Britain.
For example, the great Eric Cantona, who forewent the 1998 World Cup in France because of his pride. Legendary Brandt Schuster, who faced problems with German officials when he was only 24 and abandoned his national team forever. Or even Zidane, who put aside everything when he was about to reach the World Cup championship. Sometimes a hero is a person who does his best, but the odds are against him. Sometimes a hero is a proud loser, like Van Basten, who was one of the best attackers in the history, but he waved goodbye to football because of his injury. Or like Roberto Baggio, who performed a miracle for Italy in 1994, but eventually. Sometimes a hero is a football player who plays the leading role for a tragedy. And finally, sometimes a hero isn't someone special. He's someone who's like his nation, someone who materializes people's hopes and fulfills their demands, but he's exactly like them. Like Jorge Campos, whose clothes, behavior, and crazy acts was a perfect example of the culture of Mexicans. Or Roger Milla, who represented the suffering of the Black continent more than anyone else. Or Lev Yashin, whose life and behavior was a typical example of the Soviet working class. Well, football knows many ways to turn its players into heroes. It's true that club games are important, but the great heroes of football emerge from national matches. George Best, Ryan Giggs, George Weah, or even De Stefano were great players who never experienced the World Cup. They're heroes, but not as big as the players who shone in the World Cup. In World Cup matches, the best players in the world gather with their national flags and outfits and bend over backwards to gain victory for their nations. People view their great players as saviors, like their protagonists in stories who go to fight the enemies on their own to save their cities or countries.
We've played 2.5 minutes of stoppage time. England trail by 2-1. Beckham could raise the roof here with a goal. Beckham scores the goal to take England all the way to the World Cup finals.
This is what lifts them to a status that's higher than a hero. This is what turns them into a myth in a way that they become national symbols. So upon hearing their names, everyone will remember their countries. This is what the World Cup does. The first legend of the World Cup was Leonidas, a player who discovered the most attractive strike, the bicycle kick. In 1938, Leonidas scored 7 goals, displayed many bicycle kicks, and his team ascended to the semifinals thanks to him. Those days when Brazilian players were against black players, Leonidas was the voice of all barefoot players who used to play on sand. Maybe that was why the legend was playing without socks and shoes in the match against Poland. Later on, it was just Fontaine's turn. In the 1958 World Cup, what Fontaine did was miraculous. He was the first player who towered over his team. He scored 13 goals in 6 games against the best defensive players in the world. No one had ever been able to do what he did that day. Probably no one else ever will. For a player who wasn't even supposed to be invited to the national team until just a few weeks before the World Cup, it was the biggest turn of events. Afterwards, it was a turn of one of the biggest names in history who used the World Cup as an opportunity to become a legend. Pelé was one of a kind. He would dribble, escape, shoot, and pass the ball, and he'd do all the things better than any player you can think of. In the semifinals of the 1958 World Cup, he scored a hat trick against France. In the final match of the same World Cup, he scored the goal that grabbed his team the championship. And he did all those things under circumstances he was only 17 years old. He was so technically skilled that in the next 2 World Cups, the defense players had no option but to injure him. But in the 1970 World Cup, he played in one of the best teams in history. He scored a goal in the final match and passed the ball that culminated in a goal and became a player who made his people happy for the 3rd time in the World Cup by standing on top of the world in football.
Then Pelé to Carlos Alberto, who shoots.
He was the only player who scored goals in 4 consecutive World Cups. Even for Pelé, a complete player who has scored over 1,000 goals during his football career, the World Cup had a different meaning. The World Cup turned Edson Arantes de Nascimento into Pelé. And you may remember Eusebio, a man who was everything the Portuguese national team had. He was the first great player in history who came from Africa. When Portugal was behind the dreadful team of that year, namely North Korea 3-0, Eusebio turned the tide. He netted the ball 4 times and helped score a goal and push his team to victory That was enough to become a legend.
With a novel 1-4-3-2 style.
Orlev Yashin, the mighty goalkeeper of the Soviet team whose outfit and black shirt remained in everyone's memory. He played in 3 World Cups and saved so many balls that he became the most popular athlete in his country, as much as his people would justify his mistakes in the match against Colombia or the goals he received in the match against Chile, saying that they were because of the blow to his head.
The result of Hungary disallows the goal for a foul on Yashin.
Now in their minds, a legend never makes a mistake.
Yashin carries on after treatment and is soon back in the thick of the action.
And then German Gerd Müller, nicknamed the nation's bomber.
Müller is there. Germany 2, Morocco 1. To Slobuda again, to Müller, who heads his third goal.
One of the best strikes in history with 14 goals in 2 World Cups. Müller scored 14 goals in 2 consecutive World Cups and catapulted his team to the 1974 championship. The goal he scored in the 1974 final match against the Netherlands made him the most popular figure in Germany. Even more popular than legendary Franz Beckenbauer, a man who once became the World Cup champion as a player and once as a head coach. Maradona, who remembers the short giant with his football in Napoli. Who remembers that Maradona was the head coach of Argentina in 2010. We don't even remember Maradona with the suspicious doping in 2004. Maradona's name is interwoven with championship and becoming the runner-up in the World Cup, with the most beautiful and controversial goal in the World Cup, with his dribbles, the fighting of the Argentine boy who was never caught.
And is that goal going to be allowed?
The World Cup made Maradona a legend. A legend everyone cried in his country for because of his tears in the 1990 final match. And Zinedine Zidane, a man who might be called the most immaculate midfielder in history, in the 1998 final match, he scored 2 goals and celebrated the biggest achievement for his country. Zidane lost 2 matches that year because of his foul and unnecessary violence. He lost the next World Cup because of his injury. But in 2006, Zizou became a real legend. He was back on his national team after a long time when he was 35 years old. He outshone in the events and helped France overcome Spain, Brazil, and Portugal and reach the final match. In the World Cup final against one of the best goalkeepers in history, he chipped the ball from the penalty spot, created several opportunities, and in the end, that evening, Zidane became as large as a World Cup star, as large as a legend. We can add other legends to the list. Brazil's Ronaldo and his astonishing display in the 4 World Cups no one can ever ignore. Johan Cruyff in the Golden Netherlands in 1974, or Bobby Charlton in the UK in 1986, Paolo Rossi in 1982 World Cup, Romario, Rummenigge, Stoichkov, Dino Zoff, Kucis, Miazza, Jairzinho, Platini, Baggio, Garrincha, Kahn, and the important rule of the World Cup is this. The great players in the event become the heroes of their countries, but the great heroes become legends of the history of football. The World Cup, with billions of fans who follow the games, is a great opportunity for players to become national heroes. So they'll be remembered for many years to come because of their achievement. The World Cup, with the vast media coverage, is the best opportunity for players to go down in history. It's an opportunity to become a hero and a legend. And this is the most important reason for the players to push themselves beyond limits. They're heroes who want to become eternal. To achieve that, they have to shine in the World Cup, and this is part of the attractiveness of the major event. Courageous journey of the contemporary heroes to become eternal. This time, when we're watching a World Cup match, we have to notice them. This time, we can watch a little closer. This is called football. Watch it carefully.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The Zionist regime's medical blockade of Gaza has been described as one that gravely breaches residents' rights to health care in Gaza and outside. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Monitor wrote in this regard, Gaza's health ministry accused the Zionist regime of delaying the entry of several X-ray machines needed to treat patients in the blockaded Palestinian territories, Reuters reports. The ministry said requests in the past 14 months for 8 different types of X-ray machines and spare parts to repair existing equipment had been rejected or delayed. Dozens of other X-ray machines were allowed into the impoverished coastal enclave during the same period. The fabricated regime of Israel, which together with Egypt maintains a blockade around Gaza, citing security concerns, says it is worried about groups commandeering such machines for other purposes. Health Ministry Director Medhat Abbas said the equipment was funded by international relief and medical institutions on behalf of hospitals in Gaza. Abbas told Reuters, holding back the entry of that equipment caused a delay in providing medical services to thousands of patients. Requests for such equipment, COGAT told Reuters, are examined on a case-by-case basis. Abbas said the Zionist regime's assertions about the medical equipment having dual uses were a lie. At Gaza City Shifa Hospital, Nalat Zaino, 51, said she had been waiting 45 days to have an X-ray done of her kidneys. Doctors blamed the delay on the withholding of equipment. As if the pain I am feeling wasn't enough, waiting has been another form of torture, the mother of four told Reuters outside the X-ray unit. The ensuing blockade, limiting the amount of goods crossing in and out, has crippled Gaza's economy and healthcare system, which suffers from a chronic shortage of hospital beds and medical equipment. Meanwhile, Arab News reported the Zionist regime's ban is not limited to medical equipment needed for hospitals in Gaza. It is also preventing the entry of spare parts for broken equipment in Gaza and the transfer of equipment for repair outside. Gaza's health ministry accused the Zionist regime of exposing patients in intensive care and those with cancers, heart diseases, strokes, and complex fractures to health risks, as they are being deprived of devices that identify health problems and the required medical interventions. The Ministry of Health called on the relevant bodies to put direct pressure on the Zionist regime to bring in medical and diagnostic equipment and spare parts for broken equipment to save patients in the Gaza Strip from the guillotine of the occupation and the blockade by providing for their full treatment needs. Patients are forced to transfer to other hospitals outside the Gaza Strip, including hospitals in Al-Quds or the West Bank, and some in Egypt and Jordan, in order to obtain a diagnosis before starting treatment due to the lack of medical equipment. Samir Abu Al-Ain, 55, said he had to wait for 2 months until he obtained a medical referral and an Israeli permit to travel to Al-Quds for examinations at Augusta Victoria Hospital. Abu Al-Ain told Arab News, "I was diagnosed with cancer several months ago. Before that, there were suspicions on the part of the attending physician, but he was unable to identify the disease until after I got a diagnosis in Al-Quds, and I had to wait a long time until I got the necessary papers." He added, "It is not enough that we suffer from diseases, we suffer from waiting also, and the fear that treatment will not be available. Many of the medicines that the doctor prescribed for me are often not available, and I have to wait a long time until they are. Obtaining a medical referral to hospitals outside the Gaza Strip involves a long series of bureaucratic procedures." The Palestinian Center for Human Rights warned of the serious repercussions resulting from the Zionist regime's continued block on import equipment, which is needed to save the lives of thousands of patients in the Gaza Strip hospitals. Patients also suffer while waiting for a pass from the Zionist regime to Al-Quds and the West Bank, with dozens of them facing the Zionist regime's security bans. the primary responsibility for providing medical supplies to the population of the Gaza Strip lies with the Zionist regime's occupation, according to Articles 55 and 56 of the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949, said the center. More than 2.3 million people in Gaza depend on governmental health facilities to receive treatment, while these facilities suffer from serious deterioration as a result of the blockade policy imposed by the Zionist regime occupation authorities on the Strip for more than 15 years, it said. The center added that the internal Palestinian division resulted in the fragility of the health system and a permanent shortage in the list of essential medicines and medical devices, in addition to the shortage of specialized medical staff. Bazaar.
Many people have ideas. However, those who turn their ideas into reality are the ones who search for ways to make their ideas happen. More often than not, this occurs by joining knowledge with method. Knowledge brings competitive advantages and generates sustainable market leadership. Its tools are creativity and innovation, which are all intangible human talents. Never more than now has knowledge been so critical and significant in production and the shift towards a knowledge-based economy. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiyarzadeh, and this week we are going to explore the central role science and technology parks play in complementing the knowledge-based production ecosystem. We wanted to see how the government is shifting towards a knowledge-based economy, and plus we wanted to understand why tech parks are so critical to industry development and the national economy. So let's get started. To better understand the country's knowledge-based ecosystem, we visited an event at Semnan Science and Technology Park where we could get some answers. Science and technology parks are where startups and innovative teams can operate in one geographical location. These areas provide diverse services and facilities to companies that fit the criteria. We were able to catch up with a couple companies that operate out of this park. One of these companies specializes in producing advanced machines used in mining. This company is one of only a handful that has managed to indigenize these previously imported products. Events like the one we visited helped braid together and link companies, investors, and infrastructures with the necessary resources to complete projects. These components all make up the various parts of the knowledge-based ecosystem. But we also wanted to know how science and tech parks operate and why they are attractive to businesses. One of the advantages of these parks is that it's a space where crucial resources are offered. These places are a focal point for serving knowledge-based companies producing advanced, specialized products needed in the domestic market. Science and technology parks also serve as a launching pad toward the international arena. We spoke with a park official who helped shed more light on this issue.
There are four scenarios of which foreign companies could have the opportunity to reside in Sanlan Science and Technology Park. Well, the first scenario will be the execution of soft landing programs between the two countries, which gives the foreign companies an opportunity to get familiar with the host country's market. Well, the second scenario will be holding joint events, including joint startup events, fairs, and similar events, which could help them get familiar with each other. And the other scenario, or the third way that a company could have the chance to come to our park, will be to find and carry out joint projects with our companies, and finally sharing the interests. The fourth scenario will be holding joint innovation tours, which gives them, which gives the companies an opportunity to get familiar with how you know innovation ideas are being implemented in other countries.
These parks are essential in filling a gap in the tech innovation ecosystem, providing monetary resources and attracting investments. These establishments also join investors with particular companies and projects. They offer numerous unique services such as facilitating visa processes, offering financial assistance such as soft loans or even special incentives under free trade zones like tax exemptions. And it doesn't stop there. This park offers so much more to investors.
The other solution or the other way that could attract foreign investors will be to define BOT models, which means they have to introduce projects and within the framework of our protocols. And once it has been approved, they can operate the project for a while. This includes mainly long-term projects. Particularly, and I shall have to tell you that Sanlan Science and Technology Park is very interested in projects in the fields of artificial intelligence, IT, ICT, IoT, and virtual reality. And we could help these companies. And once they have, once they build it and then operate it, they could transfer it to our park.
Most tech parks are active in the international sphere and collaborate with other domestic tech parks. Furthermore, these areas function as export hubs. Therefore, one of their main activities is boosting and supplying domestic products to this end.
Sanlan Science and Technology Park has been very active in international arena. And our president, Dr. Nazari, has put a great focus in this part. And for information, I have to tell you that we have held two prestigious international events at our park. One in our park, last year we did it in March, I think, with the presence of some great companies, a Turkish delegation, some companies from Turkey. And before that, we held a joint event with Paris Technology Park, which was technology investment meeting, which we had brought another Turkish delegation to that event, and it was one of the first collaborations between science and technology parks of Iran with Paris Technology Park in such a big international event.
Over the years, the government has placed special attention on knowledge-based companies while implementing new approaches to support tech parks and their businesses. Some of these initiatives aim to remove obstacles along the path of development of these companies. Other activities involve giving resources to executive branches to further develop the ecosystem of innovation and technology nationwide. Along these lines, the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology has implemented a series of activities. This includes investing some $1.4 billion towards financial services. The government has also created a strategic technology development headquarters. It is tasked with implementing 400,000 tech projects and 150 commercialization projects. But that's not all. The government has also established 65 innovation centers and dozens more accelerators to support the developing entrepreneurship ecosystem. Currently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies scattered across the nation. These enterprises offer services and products in numerous industries. Many are active in biotech, computer software, agriculture, food, chemical tech, aircraft maintenance, steel, gas, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals, just to name a few. According to government figures, the knowledge-based ecosystem accounts for more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. Moreover, the share of knowledge firms in the country's GDP in 2019 exceeded $34 billion and witnessed a 450% growth since then. That's all according to the Vice President for Science and Technology. Now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bedclothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find distress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of these disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reach the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem, how is the process towards the solution, and what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is the phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, the linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose this felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So as you could see, it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen.
There is so much more that can be said about the country's knowledge-based production and activities. So before we go, let's look at a couple of developments in this area. Most of us are familiar with vitamin supplements. However, some vitamins need to be injected, which can be a hassle. Now, a knowledge-based company has produced an oral form of one of these vitamins, saving many of us from the pain of sticking needles. This pharmaceutical company has produced the first oral form of a vitamin B complex that was typically only found in an injectable form. This company also operates out of Pardis Science and Technology Park. It is also one of the first and largest knowledge-based companies. It might be interesting to know that this company mainly produces raw materials such as probiotic products needed in the pharma industry. Such productions have saved the country millions on imports so far. Knowledge-based productions are driven by scientific discoveries, and Iranian scientists produce roughly 2% of the world's scientific articles. That's according to the Minister of Science, Research and Technology. Mohammad Ali Zulfigol says Iran, on average, registers around 70,000 scientific articles in international journals each year. He says Iran is now globally ranked 15th for the number of scientific papers it produces. Zulfigol noted the quality ranking of Iranian articles in the top 10 fields like technology and engineering. The minister highlighted that the nation ranks 5th in nanotechnology publications as well. The official further added that those publishing academic articles also work in knowledge-based companies, helping produce quality products in the competitive field. And with that, we come to the end of this segment. You can contact us with your thoughts and comments via email. And don't forget, you can also send us topics you're interested in. Thank you for tuning in, and join us next week, same time, for another edition of Bazaar. It's bye for now. Until then.
Revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
Iran's domestic production capacities. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As you know, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, dubbed